So I will introduce our first speaker. Dr. Lori Perangeli will be speaking. And she is an associate professor of nursing at East Stroudsburg University. She has graduate degrees from Binghamton University in community rural nursing and certificates in public health, simulations, and parish nursing. She teaches graduate and undergraduate courses in community health nursing and global health. Her research interests include student attitudes toward the poor and homeless, impact of poverty simulations, and student nurse perceptions and caring for the dying. So thank you.
Welcome, everyone. I do have a few extra on my handouts. T-tests, statistical results are uploaded for you, as well as a page on the competencies, as well as a reference list. There's a few competencies up here as well as reference lists if you want them later in my card. So I did give you a very detailed PowerPoint. I know it should be a lot less detailed, but I figured when you leave and you forget things, then you'll have more information to go by. So because of that, I might be flying through some slides or even skipping some. So that's the reason that I'll be doing that. So no disclosures to report. And this is basically what was in the abstract. And so I'm going to be talking about basically a poverty simulation, how we looked at attitudes of the students towards those in poverty, how the focus groups looked at evolving professional identity and professional practice as a result of the simulation, as well as if they develop some empathy or sensitivity for vulnerable populations. And then at the end, to look at how you might be able to take a look at a poverty simulation and actually link it to curriculum. So a bit of background very briefly in the next two slides. Basically, nurses are going to be working with people in poverty, even though the poverty rate has come down. Recently, there's still tens of millions of people who are out there that nurses are going to be involved with. And it really is important, we feel, to impart to them feeling the daily difficulties that people in poverty have, the experiences that they have, and not have their practice really influenced or guided by anecdotal pieces in the media, or even perhaps by other healthcare professionals that they might come in contact with who have somewhat of a negative attitude towards those in poverty. Additionally, our nursing education groups have stressed the importance of preparing students to work with a variety of populations, including the vulnerable. So one of your handouts does describe some of the areas where I think the poverty simulation could have an impact on the AACN, the NLN, and the Quad Council competencies. So how many here have done a poverty simulation or know what the MCAPS one is? Quite a few. How many have not experienced or know about the simulation? Okay, so maybe about half and half. So briefly, it is something that is widely used. It's called the Missouri. At the bottom, you'll see the Missouri Community Action Poverty Simulation. It does take students through a 1 hour. It's 4 weeks, 15 minutes a week. They are the participants in a variety of different kinds of families, such as unemployed, single, geriatrics, families who have lost a spouse, someone who might have been put in jail, people who are seeking out or on temporary assistance, and families who are taking care of grandchildren, single parent families. So what happens is the students are in groups and they have to, their goal in the family is to be able to provide for basic necessities and shelter for their family. Literature, there's a few pages on this. Basically, what I'd like to say is that with the nursing literature, which is all I'm reporting on, but your reference list does mention social work groups that also have used this and others, that many of the studies do show that are there on poverty simulations. They show that they are effective in impacting student perceptions, as well as moving them towards more positive attitudes of those who are in poverty, and reducing structure and stigma surrounding poverty. And many of them also use the Atherton scale. So in general, they find that there is positive results from using a poverty simulation. Yang and Woomer showed that it led to greater empathy and understanding of the barriers to healthcare. It did change students' practice, whereas they were more cognizant of providing community referrals and also the interprofessional piece that we're all trying to bring our students to an interprofessional education. And Sworden Reuter mentioned that the greater the contact with poverty they found, the better the attitude. So one of our results is even going to suggest that you start a poverty simulation earlier in the curriculum to identify negative attitudes that they may have and be able to take that time to really change those attitudes through the curriculum. And perhaps thread things throughout so that they do have a longer contact with people who are vulnerable populations. A little twist, Patterson and Holton did some pre-sim readings. We did not do that with ours. And they found that there were significant changes in some of the stigma factors about poor folks living better than they do or being lazy. And DeLashmith and Rankin, they found that there were more positive attitudes on post-test. Where students would pay higher taxes to support programs and where their social society has a responsibility to try and help them. Also, Menzel, basically, from them, they used the Atherton scale, and they did say that students were amazed at the barriers that they had to deal with going through the poverty simulation and the unavailability of resources, or resources were there but very hard to actually access. So we did a dual method design, pre-test, post-test, and focus groups 3 months later, immediately pre-test, immediately post-test, and as I said, right before the focus groups, we did do a another post-test. The ATP scale, if you're not used to, if you're not familiar with that, it is Attitudes Towards Poverty. It's Young and Weaver, widely used, and they do have some attitudes that are expressed by people in the U.S. society towards poverty and the poor, and they look at subscales of deficiency, stigma, and structural perspectives, 5-point Likert, and they do have a choice for a neutral choice. So the research questions we're looking at in this presentation are basically their attitudes used through the attitude scale pre and post. What were their experiences having the greatest influence on their attitudes? So that was in the demographics only pretest. We also looked at what did they think after the poverty simulation, of course the post-test again, and what other types of comments did they have? How did it affect possibly their evolving professional identity and their practice? And that came out in the focus groups. So again, I just mentioned these things with the focus groups. We did do two with a set of juniors and seniors. And the questions, basically, this is a little redundant, but what did they do with any new awareness of the poor? And again, the evolving nursing profession practice, and what if anything else stands out for them for having gone through the poverty simulation. So these were some of the, I did take some additional questions from Randall's dissertation, and this was in order to enable us through their demographics to look at where they felt their greatest attitude change or attitudes were impacted by poverty, how often it happened, was it coursework, was it clinical courses, was it volunteer work, and basically we found volunteer work was number one, as well as some, there are three top ones that I'll show you. So again, we did have 66 to start. We did have a control group, but they were too different from the experimental group. They were freshmen and sophomores, so we're not reporting on that right now. We'll be doing something with that a little bit later. So out of the 66, we're reporting on the 55 where we had complete data. So we used Wilcox impaired sign rank test. That's good for ordinal level data. We had the, I did give you a comparison with t-test because there's a lot of t-tests reported in the literature, but the results were exactly the same from the what was significant in the Wilcoxon versus the t-test. So if they had lower values, they're more critical of the poor, and if they had higher values, there was more understanding of the poor. So here's our group, mostly female. Most of them were in suburban areas, followed by rural areas, and most more of juniors than seniors at that point, you know, as the groups get a little smaller as they get towards senior year. So here we had three areas that from the ATP score that were significant, where there was a change for more understanding and less critical of the poor, and those were the statements that welfare makes people lazy. They became more understanding that people are not... that poor people are not poor because they're lazy, and that poor people are poor due to circumstances beyond their control, they're more understanding of that after having gone through the poverty simulation. And if they were poor, they would accept welfare benefits. So that whole process of the frustration and what they had to do to get through the simulation on a daily basis with the poor did help in terms of becoming less critical. More critical areas, there were seven of those. They did say that they felt people, poor people are dishonest, and they learned that the manner in which the poor utilize resources, that they might have had to cheat a little bit in the poverty simulation in order to get through the system. So they were learning that quite quickly. I even had students at the end, at the last 15-minute section, so frustrated they were robbing the bank to get money because they couldn't get a job, and it was just very frustrating. They felt more critical, that they're a little different from the rest of society, that they act a little differently, and that they have a different set of values from other people. And again, the poverty simulation kind of made them look different, made them look a little bit more at maybe the reason they're doing this is because of all the barriers that they have to get through. Also more critical, that children raised on welfare will never amount to anything. They went a little more neutral on that. I think they found, because in the poverty simulation, if the electricity was turned off in a home, the children were removed and put in foster care. A parent might have been put in jail. They might have been left at home alone in the evening because a parent had to work evening shift and they had no money for caregiving. So we found that might have been some of the reasons why they changed in that direction. They also were a little more critical, thinking that there might have been lack of personal responsibility in these two areas, where the society has the responsibility to help poor people and where poor people think they deserve to be supported. So a little more critical with that. Other people have found that in the literature where they were less critical of that. And then personal traits were not significant, so they didn't feel that they were dirty or had lower intelligence. And they really came to understand that people who receive welfare are not lazy, and often poverty is often a result of their circumstances, where they're living, their education, et cetera. So we were glad to see some of that. 2 minutes. Oh, my God. Okay, so with some of the discussion, we feel that the transformations might be with the poverty simulation because there's many stereotypes that they grew up with and may have been exposed to. I might even add that perhaps in clinical courses, maybe they're exposed to the negative behaviors of some healthcare professionals. 1 hour simulation plus two debriefings, and which turns out to be about 3 hours, may not be enough. So then we're feeling that there are reasons that we need to actually try to incorporate into the curriculum some more pieces to help them deal with that. I'm just going to throw that away. So here's a little bit about their greatest influence on poverty. First is volunteer work, as I mentioned, clinical courses, and multiple actually employment. So, and also 60% of them had friends, or as well as have 27% had family who were assisted in some way. So they've had a lot of exposure to that. The focus group responses, I'll fly through some of those. They found that poverty and poor people, it was very eye-opening, it challenged their stereotypes, and they did increase their empathy, as well as realizing help may be there, but it's hard to access. Any new awareness, they said they really need to understand each person's individual experience and be prepared to respond and intervene effectively as a nursing professional to impact poverty. Also, their sense of identity involving nursing professional, being non-judgmental came out for them, being an advocate and really being able to collaborate and assist with assessing resources. As far as practice, again, it's challenging their assumptions and biases, which is, of course, important. They did feel that it influenced their thoughts about getting involved with policy changes and really sensitized them to the concerns of their patients. So not only if they were in adult health would they ask about, do you know what your pills are when you go home, but where are you getting your food, do you have child care, et cetera. So they said they would really increase their awarenesses of that. The experience overall they felt was valuable and eye-opening, and they can't generalize. They really have to individualize. This is one of my favorites, but I'm going to skip through this. You can read it on your handout. Our limitations, we had some missing data, I mentioned that, sample size, and our director that I had helped with this, since it was one of the first times I had done it, she had a little bit of a bias where she had adopted some children from people who were in a difficult situation, and so I think she had a little bias, but our focus group showed that 3 months later they still had a positive impact. So in terms of curriculum, really, if you do it early in the curriculum, I think that helps. You'll get to know their attitudes. You'll have time to change their attitudes. You can certainly do post-conferences, focus groups, maybe in a maternal child health course. That's a place to then thread it in even a little bit further. Take a look at if they are getting negative attitudes from healthcare professionals out there and try to work with that. Also consider requiring elective courses. Perhaps that might relate to poverty if that works in your curriculums, and you can do that. You might want to thread those clinical experiences so that they're exposed for more time. You might even develop an additional role packet from what is given in the poverty simulation to meet the needs of your local community. These are just some assignments that many of you probably do that you can also incorporate into the curriculum. And students do say, let's do this, and let's get it to be interdisciplinary. It will benefit a lot of people. And then there's a few things in here in terms of, we can address some of the curriculum pieces through the competencies in communication and dimensions of practice, cultural diversity, ethics, and leadership. And the next few slides will talk about that. And again, if you know what the poverty simulation is, you can think about how it actually does cover some of these areas. So for those of you who are looking at how can I get the curriculum matched up with some of these through the poverty simulation, these are some suggestions that I think work very well, although you may not find that to be the case. So again, it does impact some attitudes, not all of them. It does make a positive difference. And as I said, you can identify negative attitudes and work to change that and actually connect them with the competencies. So thank you very much. I'm probably over.